Greetings, I'm your host Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. For all the returning listeners and subscribers, welcome back! So glad to have you here again. If you were here last night for the Beyond the Red Zone record-setting 5-hour stream, that's right, we went for 5 hours. That doesn't sound right. But I think you get it. For all the new listeners, welcome. So glad to have you here. If you enjoy what you see, on the way out, hit like and subscribe. It's a passive gesture that goes a long way. That being said, let me get into some plugs. If you didn't already know, June 8th, please set that date aside on your calendar, because a few of us from the show are going to be in D.C. with Adolph Reed, Pascal Robert, Daniel Tutt, Vanessa Willis, Derek Varn, as MT calls him, my stunt double, Billy Bunton, and of course me. We're going to be talking Beyond the Black Jacobin, C.L.R. James, and the struggle for socialism in America. So excited about that. Wherever you're watching or listening to the show, there's links in the descriptions so you can get tickets. If you can't make it out to the show, don't worry. It's going to be streamed. There's tickets you can get for the stream as well. Very excited for that. Also, it's just me tonight. Sorry, guys. Pascal and MT will be joining us tomorrow night for movie night. So if you are a patron, we're going to have movie night. We're going to be watching Let It Fall, a documentary about the LA riots that doesn't just talk about 1992, but goes back 10 years, 82 to 92. Should be a very interesting conversation. Speaking of anniversaries, should parents of school shooters be punished? April 20th, 420, as some of you watching this show call it, is sadly the anniversary of the Columbine massacre. So this show, I had no idea it was going to be this kind of on the nose. There is an idiom that the sins of the father shall not be visited upon the son, meaning that the wrongdoing of the parent isn't the fault of the child, and that child should not be punished. The negative actions of a child are a direct result of bad parenting, nurture over nature. Punishment must still be carried out, but not upon the child, but on the parent. But is this a helpful solution in solving the problem for school shooters? The instant fix to lowering crime rates in a bad area, the most common solution we see in the states, is a sweeping police action arresting people for the smallest of offenses and locking them up for longer sentences. Our toughness on crime will clean the streets. This will announce to the community that the local government sees their plight and it won't tolerate criminal behavior. Quickly, law enforcement is over-policing the area because more arrests mean cleaner streets. Before you know it, law enforcement looks like an occupying force of the community it is protecting. The citizens are under duress from the same forces sworn to protect it. Innocent citizens get caught up in this heavy-handed approach and suffer the same punishment and harassment as the actual criminals. Neighboring communities that might include more homeowners, voters, and political donors see the numbers of arrests go up, the number of break-ins decrease, and see the action as a victory. Who becomes the beneficiary of this heavy-handed approach? What is the social cost to the actual community that becomes over-surveilled and over-policed in the process? Taking a closer look at the causes of high crime rates, a more reasonable solution would be jobs programs and non-punitive social services. These would leave the community with more positive long-term effects, but that's not how we understand justice in post-Great Society America. We are told these are costly endeavors. They take years to turn around a crime-ridden, impoverished area. We're told that criminal behavior is the result of your pathology, and a community with a population of defective humans becomes a defective population that needs to be controlled. The sins of the few become the burden of the whole for generations to come. The preferred solution isn't New Testament grace, but Old Testament fire and brimstone. These current citizens are tainted from birth by rotten generations of the past. This is the ethos of criminal justice in the U.S. context. In the case of the Crumbly family, their 15-year-old son, Ethan, walked into Oxford High School in Oakland County, Michigan, and shot 11 people, killing 4. Ethan was a troubled boy who used a handgun purchased by his parents to commit this heinous crime. Ethan, only 15 years old, was sentenced to life in prison without parole. The harshest sentence Michigan can give since it doesn't have the death penalty. His parents, for their crime of purchasing the handgun and not addressing, quote, warning signs, got manslaughter charges and sentenced to 10 to 15 years in prison each. Today I ask the simple question, is this what justice looks like? To talk about this with me today, we have returning guest Julie Weber, who wrote the book Beyond Columbine, School Violence and the Virtual. Please welcome Illinois State Professor Julie Weber. Heyo.
Hello.
How are you? Okay.
Yeah. I'm ready.
Okay. You say that. Are you really? Julie, thank you so much for taking the time to hang with us tonight. What do you know about Ethan Crumbly? And you wrote a book about Columbine. Do you see any similarities between Ethan with Dylan and Eric?
Actually, no. I mean, you know, there's some surface similarities, but the real similarities that I see are actually between Ethan Crumbly and Kip Kinkle, who shot up Thurston High School in Oregon in 1998, so roughly 1 year before Columbine happened. And Kinkle, the specific circumstances of his case was that he had been hearing voices much like Ethan. Mm-hmm. And he had, you know, possibly some, you know, schizophrenia, something like that. You know, nobody diagnosed it. His parents had tried to get him help. But he did, end up shooting them and then going to the school anyway. And since then, there's an interesting article in the New Yorker because he had a sibling who was 11 years older than him, and she was at some university in Hawaii when it happened. Mm-hmm. And she sort of has maintained her anonymity for obvious reasons, right? Yeah. Over the last few years. And she actually approached a New Yorker reporter last year because, and I'm wondering if that was because of this case that she's seeing going on in Michigan, and wanted to talk about how she is in contact with her brother weekly. He's in a psychiatric facility. I think he's in a psychiatric facility. He actually really did get screened and tested and assessed right after, because he was suicidal too. And so that's the one that it reminds me of the most, because Ethan had been asking his parents for help too, and they had been saying, I think they weren't equipped to know what they were supposed to do. That's the sense that I get. And I read in some article that she had insurance, the mother had insurance. She worked for a real estate company, so, you know, they don't always give comprehensive insurance, mm-hmm. at these, like, you know, realtors and these kinds of things. So, and his dad was doing DoorDash. And so they may not have had insurance or known how they could get insurance for their child. Mm-hmm. And so I think they kept putting it off because they didn't know how much it was going to cost. They were having money troubles. They were fighting about money all the time. So one could say he got neglected, but he got neglected because his parents really didn't have the resources that they needed in that community or help that they needed to be able to do that. You know what I mean? To get him help. And in the case of Kinkle, you know, you can say even if he had gotten the resources, he could have done it anyway. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Because Kinkle did get the help. The case of Dylan and
Eric,
I think, you know, they were denying. I mean, they weren't telling people that they needed help. They weren't asking for help. They were out doing what they were doing and, you know, being out with friends. And, you know, I think their parents had no clue what they were planning.
Mm.
So they weren't like loners. These two were loners, Crumbly and Kinkle. And Crumbly's only friend, like, got sent away to treatment a month before the shooting.
Really?
Yeah, and he'd been talking to him and saying, I keep hearing these voices and I really need to get help. He said he hadn't slept more than 17 hours in 5 days. You know, the voices were keeping him awake. And, you know, his dad just kept telling him to write everything down in a journal. And so it's more complicated, I think, than the media has made it seem in this case. And I I've said this before. I said this the last time I was on, that I often feel like it's my sense going through all of this awful stuff that when the shooters shoot their parents before they go do it, it's kind of a thing that they're doing to absolve them of having to face the public after it's over. Like, it's a mercy thing, right? And Ethan didn't do that, but it seems like they don't know how to fix themselves, a lot of them. And I think that Ethan definitely had this problem. So that I see similarities between him and Kip Kinkle more than Dylan and Eric, who were actually trying to, you know, they had bombs and stuff. This kid just kind of walked out of the bathroom, you know, with a gun that his dad had bought 3 days before. It didn't seem like there was much planning.
No, it didn't seem like there was much planning from the little bit that I understand about it. And, you know, it also sounds like from the way you're describing it, that his parents, you know, through having financial difficulty,
yeah.
Which, again, why this case to me is such a big deal. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't have the ability to have health insurance to take their kid to a mental health professional to get it looked at. And I'll add, there's a fair amount of parents that don't want to believe mm-hmm. that their child has mm-hmm. a mental defect to that point. You know, for me, the big issue here is, as a parent, you're a parent, there's hopefully, you know, tons of parents watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
No one thinks their kid is a school shooter.
Right.
Like, no one thinks their kid's suicidal. It's always right. A shock.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird thing too, though, because one of the lines that I read, which was interesting, there's a New York Magazine article that was really well researched on this. I recommend it. I can't remember the author's name, but she, you know, she actually looked up, you know, past, legislation in Michigan. I almost thought maybe she might have been from Michigan. I'm from Michigan. Like, I mean, I grew up in Clarkston, where the mother of Ethan Crumbly grew up.
Oh, wow. You guys didn't know each other?
No, she's probably, yeah, she's younger than me. She's probably 5 or 6 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And she skied at Pine Knob. You know, I had my first kiss at Pine Knob. you know, these kinds of things. And I didn't know Oxford. I mean, I didn't live in Oxford. I knew Oxford, but Oxford's a little more rural. That's true. But I can see why, you know, I've been saying this all day. I think that the reason why they had to go to jail is because nothing can definitely be done about guns.
Yes.
Especially not in Michigan.
Yes. I do believe this was, we were saying this off air. You called it a neoliberal solution. I agree yep. with it wholeheartedly that mm-hmm. we are not going to take your guns away. We're not going to restrict your guns. We're not even going to restrict your access to guns, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, getting into kind of my second talking point, this verdict is the first of its kind.
Mm-hmm.
There have been parents in other cases that have pled out to criminal neglect charges.
Mm-hmm.
But if you dare read any comments section on the story of a school shooter, always a school shooter, never with workplace violence, there's always calls to charge the parents. Do you think many Americans see this as justice? As a parent, do you think this will instill a sense of hypervigilance to attempt to see any signs of antisocial behavior as a warning sign for extreme violence.
Well, there's a lot I could say about that personally, too.
Good.
I think a lot of, you know, I asked some of my friends in Detroit what the sense was, you know, about this, and everybody sees it as justice in Michigan. They're all for it. And I might also mention that the prosecutor, Karen McDonald, is a Democrat, which I found surprising because when I was growing up in Oakland County, the prosecutor was always Republican. I mean, they were always Republicans. So she's got to be some kind of sort of Hillary Clinton neoliberal Democrat. You know what I mean? That's almost Republican. That's the only way she'd be elected. That I can see. So, and she's, you know, she decided she didn't care about the political ramifications if she lost her job over doing this. And because she's kind of, you know, a vigilante legal person or something. And, but no, I think a lot of people saw it as justice because they couldn't see, you know, a solution like gun control or that's not going to fly in Michigan. I mean, and I also think that some people said, you know, if they wanted to blow it off and thought maybe they shouldn't have been sent to jail, some people said, well, they'll be safer there. And that should tell you how scared they should be.
Wow.
In Michigan. Yes, absolutely. That's I do not doubt that. So, I mean, and then, you know, with the media called it when they left and went to, I think they went to Detroit City, right? And they were hiding sort of in a, they said they were hiding out in a warehouse and there was a manhunt after them. That's not exactly what happened. I mean, what happened was they went home, checked the gun after it happened, met with the police. They weren't charged until 3 days later. They took a bunch of money out of their accounts. They got credit cards and they went to a hotel and they still didn't feel safe. So they kept going to hotels and still didn't feel safe. So they went to their friend's warehouse in Detroit. A lot of people have things like this, you know, there's artist lofts or whatever right in Detroit, someone they might have known. And they hid there. But the way they presented it in the media is there's a manhunt on. As soon as Karen McDonald decided she wanted to charge them and they weren't like at their house being sitting ducks, right? Then there was a manhunt on. I just find that really not truthful about what was actually happening, right? I think they were really trying to protect themselves while they figured out what was happening. And it's not to say that, you know, they might not deserve some responsibility, but I think that there's a lot of class issue here. Mm-hmm. You know, that people in Oakland County is one of the wealthiest counties in the country. Mm-hmm. And they live in the least developed part of it, is how I would put it.
Okay.
And probably in the most rural part of it. So I could see them being sacrificed for everybody else's peace of mind. Mm-hmm. That's sort of how I see it. I don't know if that sounds crazy, but
I mean, it sounds heavy. It does. Again, you're talking about these people that are having money troubles. And from what I was reading, it looked like the dad had worked in tech off and on, but I guess he was having an off period, unless they say tech is DoorDash.
He was driving DoorDash.
Yeah, I mean,
and they, you know, they had money troubles and they weren't, but you know, they also, you know, they went kayaking, they did all the Michigan stuff with their son, they did those things. They had just started, she had only went to the range with her son one time. Mm-hmm. This was a new thing. So, and she had never shot a gun before in her life.
Why did they decide to get the gun again?
The dad did.
And because it's a thing that they're used to in the area they're from, or?
No, he was from Florida.
Well, I guess, okay.
But he wasn't from Michigan in the sense that, I don't know how to convey this, in the sense that almost everybody grows in Michigan grows up with a gun in their house. Mm-hmm. That's unsecured, usually. And I grew up around guns. And I knew not to go near them, right? But it's usually for a purpose, right? It's like for hunting. Everybody goes up north. People leave their guns up north. They don't leave them in their houses at, you know, downstate where they actually live, or they leave them in their trailer or, you know, their camper up there, right? So it's a real outdoorsy state, and a lot like Wisconsin in that way. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, you know, maybe they didn't fit in that way because they didn't know that, you know, if you have a gun, it's not about this. I don't know what to call it, but I see this other sense of over the last 20 or 30 years, guns have become this kind of thing, this kind of status symbol.
Okay.
And they're kind of detached from hunting and wilderness, or, you know what I mean?
I would say would you say that in certain communities, though? Because I understand what you mean. There is a certain, if you want to put labels on it, almost feels like a petite bourgeois community of like mm-hmm. small business owners in some yeah. sort of suburb of three-car mm-hmm. garage McMansions. Yeah. You're going to find a lot of gun owners.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have multiple guns, right? Because that's the whole thing.
The more than they need. Has
like, it's like seven guns. And they are going to be insanely large and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I watch, there's like YouTube videos. And this goes through all ethnicities. Because there's tons of YouTube videos, which kind of shocked me. Mm-hmm. Of like black dudes in the middle of nowhere shooting these like 50 cal rounds. Just to shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, I come from urban California, where if you have a gun, you're doing a crime, right? You're mm-hmm. not protection for what? So I do understand, you know, living in different parts of the country, I do understand there is a culture around hunting season,
mm-hmm.
Working in the Gulf of Mexico on the coast of Louisiana, you know, seeing young people with gun racks in their cars before they're mm-hmm. 20, like going to high school with gun racks in their cars because it's hunting season and there's actually guns in the rack,
mm-hmm.
To me was a shocking vision in a post-Columbine world,
mm-hmm.
but nothing had changed there.
Right.
Even though there was school shootings in the South, like I think right. Alabama was precedes Columbine, if I'm not mistaken, right? Where the kid called the fire alarm or whatever bomb threat and picked up.
Yes. Where were they? Arkansas?
Arkansas. Sorry, I said Alabama. Mm-hmm. It's Arkansas. You're right. It was Arkansas.
Yeah, they were in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was that one in, oh God, why can't I think of the state? It's because it's a state you just drive through. I'm terrible.
For me, they're all states I drive through.
Oh, okay. Kentucky, West Paducah, Kentucky was one too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is, again, is kind of a, you know, a place where it's common to see gun racks on cars. Mm-hmm. So the possession of the gun for me isn't a call that the parent, or it isn't a sign that the parents are wrong, because it's right. just, like you said, such a commonality
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
in Michigan.
I mean, I think, you know, my brother had BB guns when he was a child. I think my parents, you know, I probably wanted to have one at one point, and they wouldn't let me because that wasn't considered feminine.
now you get a pink one.
I grew up in the 70s. And you know, I wanted a piranha because my neighbor had one. You know, I had all these kind of like, I don't know, non-stereotypical things I wanted to do. And I think they were kind of horrified by it. So I just, I don't know. But yeah, you know, you wanted to be able to do that. And you know, I would go up north with my dad and he would go hunting and I would go out in the woods with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't actually hunt. He didn't really want me to do that. But I was always around guns. I was always seeing him loading shells and things like that in the basement, you know, but it was purely for sport. It wasn't for, you know, he wouldn't have even thought to get a gun if somebody broke into the house.
Interesting. He never said it was for protection.
No.
But that's the pivot though, too. Would you agree of the NRA
yes.
to really talk about protection And I love when someone's like, this is for protect my family. Like, no one wants your family. I've been around your children. That little child has a green booger hanging out of his nose as big as a fist. Nobody wants your disease-ridden children. I'm right. Sorry to break it to you.
I agree completely. Yes, those fears are overblown, I think, in that sense, too. And it's, that's funny. I have NRA targets from sixth grade camp.
Oh, wow.
I have
a very different NRA.
A very different NRA. And everybody in Michigan my age knows that NRA, right? The educational NRA. So, and I think you're right. I think you've hit it. We've got there now. You've hit it. It's this NRA, you know, I don't know what it is. Some kind of, like you said, petite bourgeois, you know, I have a right to protect myself. I don't know where the fear comes from. What are you afraid of would be my question. You know what I mean?
You have to explain to these people. Does it feel like, to you, I don't know how often you hear this conversation in Illinois, where you are now. There's so many things that are so cheap, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking about from the U.S. context. I live in Mexico. I see pretty real poverty. I see people living in ramshackle homes that they built with driftwood and boxes. It's insane, right? But if you're living in a poor housing community, like a housing project, you probably have a big screen TV because they're just so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's probably certain creature comforts that you have. You may not have a PS5
right
in your house, but I'm pretty sure the things that you think someone would want A, are just too big to take, first and foremost, and B, most people have them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this fear, I don't know where it comes from.
Sorry, it's my son.
Don't worry, we can't see him. He just kind of okay. Looks like, I yeah, told I, everyone that I, you're I, the woman I'm from sure. the, I, no one can see your son. Your son could do a cartwheel naked, we wouldn't know.
Okay,
but that would be the horrible part if it did come through, and then the ban and everything that would happen to me after the fact would be horrible. But
I don't think I can do a cartwheel. But.
I don't want to do anything. Just stay still. I told everyone that you're the woman from the Aha video, and you've been stuck in that animation for the last 40 years.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Now that song's in your head.
It is. Yes.
So it's like I don't understand this idea that everyone's gonna, you know, run to your very secluded suburb.
Yeah.
You know, to try to, you know, harm your family in any sort of way. Is it Steven Seagal's fault at this point? Because and Charles Bronson, since they made all these movies.
Yes, I'm ready to blame Steven Seagal. He's kind of a turd. I saw him once in Indianapolis. I went to see the Dalai Lama. I did. I know, that's crazy, isn't it? But it was a long time ago. But Steven Seagal introduced him, and he was just such a jerk. I mean, I don't know. I just didn't like him. His personality was not very good.
That's bad when your personality is not very good in front of the Dalai Lama.
Right, right. That's what we thought. So, yeah, we stood in line to go in and see the Dalai Lama, and here this guy's doing his narcissistic shtick right in front of everyone, and yeah.
Was he doing his fake martial arts?
No, he was trying to appear like he was like a really peaceful dude, you know? But the movies and the Dalai Lama don't really go together. You know what I mean? But I always find that people who take on, not always, but certain people who are really angry people that take mm-hmm. on Buddhism, you know, like they adopt it. It's not something that's endemic to their culture. Mm-hmm. They're really just trying to fight some kind of rage within. And it doesn't work. But that's one of my insights. I had it.
So you could just see it seething is what you're saying.
I could see it seething.
Well, then look, and then I don't feel bad blaming Steven Seagal and Charles Bronson for this mentality.
I mean, I always look at movies. I love action movies, but I always look at them to see, you know, like I think of Jason Statham or Denzel Washington when he does one. You know what I mean? Now he's getting a little bit older, but you know, how they use guns or if guns are a central feature of the movie. You know what I mean? Because I think sometimes the guns are too. I wouldn't want to censor movies or anything, but sometimes, you know, I have respect for actors who decide not to use a lot of guns.
Was it Burt Reynolds or Tom Selleck that was in that movie where they didn't use guns? They used like credit cards because they were like sharp edges. And he was like,
are you kidding me? That's not true.
What movie was that?
That's not true.
I'm totally serious.
I'm talking more like they do that, you know, that fighting, you know, like the, what are they
called? Oh, you want to see like martial arts?
Yeah.
Well, then you should watch more ninja movies.
Maybe I should, probably.
Duh. You and your, you know, specter of a child that keeps appearing behind you.
Yeah.
Should watch Ninja 3, The Domination tonight. It is part Flashdance, part The Exorcist, part Poltergeist, part ninja movie, but it's all amazing.
Wow. What's it called?
Ninja 3, The Domination. Yeah. Don't bother looking up Ninja 1 and 2 because they don't exist. Just watch 3.
Okay. Oh.
I guarantee you and your kids are going to have a doozy of a time.
And I'm getting ready to go into it because I have two 14-and-a-half-year-old boys. They're going to high school next year.
This comment. Ninja 3 is a hate crime against Asians. I disagree.
Well, I'll let you know once I see it.
Please send me a message since we are text friends as well. I would love to know what your children thought. If they want to watch Ninja 1 and 2, they are called Enter the Ninja is mm-hmm. one and Revenge of the Ninja. All three have nothing to do with each other.
Well, then, okay, that's fine. I'm assuming that they even catch you up, maybe.
Nope. You could just watch three. Three is just, they're all standalones. They decided to call it three for some odd reason. I enjoy three the most. It has Lucinda Dickey, who you may know from the Break-In movies.
Oh.
Yeah, she's Kelly from the Break-In movies, the white woman. That makes it easier for you to...
I'll have to check it out.
So you and your children have a great time. Back to
that was an interesting segue. But I do think that they see it as justice. And I think that, you know, I mean, I asked my friend today, a few of my friends today, and they're like, yeah, everybody's happy about it. And I asked another question. I said, so the idea of personal responsibility crosses party lines.
Ooh.
And he said, yes, it does.
And then he walked away and said, I bid you good day, ma'am.
Well, I figured it would, right? Because it's just this idea that, you know, and I think of personal responsibility, I think it's been ruined by neoliberalism, first of all. I mean, it maybe was once an interesting thing, but now it just means we're all responsible for everything. And if the state's responsible for anything, it's taking things from us or surveilling us, you know what I mean, in ways that we don't want it to. So we no longer have the night watchman of the state or the courts or anything like that. So that was, you know, very clear to me. And I do think, you know, I don't know if you've ever heard of Melinda Cooper's book, Neoliberalism's Family Values.
I've heard of it. Yeah. It's mentioned in something I was reading recently. I think in Jason Reed's book I'm reading recently. Yeah.
Oh, you're reading Jason Reed's book? Jason Reed's good.
Yeah. He was on the show Tuesday.
Oh, was he? Okay. Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to check that out. So Melinda Cooper says that, you know, she's sort of riffing off of Thatcher, you know, there's no longer any society, there's only families.
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So this means that families are going to be responsible for everything,
mm-hmm.
Including whether or not your child is a school shooter. Right. So there's no societal involvement at all.
So do you think this is the first shoe to drop in this kind of neo-fascism?
Yeah.
Like, here it goes. Mm-hmm. We're going to punish the parents. Like, we're really going to do it. You know, someone wrote in the comments about Kamala Harris when she had made a statement. I can't remember how many years ago it was. It was when she was still, I think she was the DA. No, she was the DA at the time. Mm-hmm. And she said she wanted to punish parents for truancy. And that was the big thing that she was going to do. And she was really stoked about it. You know, no parents got punished for truant children. But the fact that that was on the table,
mm-hmm.
and it was a policy that she was so excited about, kind of speaks to what we're talking about here, which is
mm-hmm.
what I don't think there's an across the board way you can look at this
mm-hmm.
and flatten it to say, yeah, that's right. You should punish parents for truant children. There's circumstances where you're like, I don't know about punishment, but maybe we should do something with some of these parents.
Right.
I've worked in unhoused services where there's parents mm-hmm. and kids, and there's a lot of things that you're like, oof.
Yeah. I agree.
But I don't, I don't think any parent can fathom their child going to school and murdering their classmates.
No.
Assuming parents possess a clairvoyance to prevent these things to me is insane. What do you think intervention would look like? And at what point do we start arresting people, or children in this case, for thought crimes?
I don't think you ever do, but I mean, I want to bring something else up that I had forgotten about that was really important in Michigan. I don't know if we had a governor, Jim Engler. He was a Republican. Mm-hmm. He was before Granholm, who was a Democrat. And he was like fourth in line in the GOP to run for president. Right. He was on their vetting list. And so he made Michigan a state where he was going to try out all these policies. So he did. He's the original welfare to work. He's the template for PRORA, the mm-hmm. 1996 Welfare to Work Act. And I don't know if you ever saw Michael Moore's movie about Columbine. I think it's a movie about Columbine.
Yeah.
Where the little boy in Flint
Columbine.
Brings his gun to school
mm-hmm.
because his mom got evicted and she was paying back her welfare at Kenny Rogers Roasters. She had to get on a bus every morning at 6 o'clock. Basically it was like prison work, and go be paid minimum wage. And so her son was not supervised at his new uncle's house where they were staying, and his uncle had a gun, and he found the gun and he took it to school, and he probably thought it was a toy, and he shot the girl next to him in class. And so I think that Michigan has been, you know, one of these, I don't know what they've done since, but it's been one of these proving grounds where a lot of horrible stuff was done under Jim Engler. And in this magazine, they also mentioned, and I had forgotten about this, at one point he closed every state-funded psychiatric facility without warning.
Mm.
Didn't call any caregivers. They just knocked, they just threw people out in the streets without
Damn.
Drugs. And the other of this article was kind of implying that there's not a lot of psychiatric services in Michigan anyway,
mm-hmm.
but that really set it back. And I know, I mean, if you've ever had, I have a child that I have tried to get a diagnosis for autism, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible. So we also have this kind of medical and healthcare crisis, I think, going on, where people just assume that you just go to the doctor and the doctor's just going to say, okay, this is what's wrong with you. They don't want to do that. You know what I mean? They're afraid of lawsuits. Parents don't want to hear it. And we deinstitutionalized the country a long time ago, 20 or 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so people are afraid of that coming back. But I think if we had something like a temporary hold, but with meaning.
But that's the thing. How do you do that to scale? How do you do that and fund it?
Mm-hmm.
There's programs trying to do it, but there's a fight because of the remembrance of the days when it was a little more punitive to put people in the insane asylum.
Right.
And when we say insane asylum, it does have negative connotations to it.
Right.
We, you know, if you're old enough like us or even older, you might even remember the Geraldo story where he breaks, I can't remember the name of it, but in upstate New York, where he sneaks in, shows the footage of the kids playing in their own feces. That place gets shut down. And we look at these places as kind of holding facilities for mentally ill people. It's a bad thing. We don't want to see them again. But now we have this problem of tons of people that, you know, in all fairness, let's say, maybe you can say their mental illness has to do with their housing insecurity. And right now we're saying, oh, it's just drug addiction. So in California, a bill just passed. We're going to build a bunch more facilities and we're going to have a bunch more beds, because there was a problem with no beds.
Yeah.
For people that were looking for treatment.
Senator got shot by his son because he couldn't get a bed for him. Right. There was a senator a U.S. senator that got shot because he couldn't get a bed for his own son. So I don't know. I mean, but we do need to address it at some level, because it's the other thing I'd mention is, like, why does this only happen in this country? I mean, it happens in other countries, but at this level, you know what I mean? In this country.
Well, I think it's back to the whole way we look at crime and punishment. I think it's very, as someone said in the chat, neo-feudal, right? It's very, everybody's got to get punished.
Yeah.
And there's never been any services for you, but the only thing we can invest in is punishment.
Yeah.
And it's going to look different at different levels. Child Protective Services is basically punishment.
Mm-hmm.
It looks and sounds a little different. It's the PMC of punishment.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to punish you. Because that's the only way. I think that's the only way we see justice is through the lens of vengeance. In reading some of the statements from the parents who lost their children or who have injured children, severely injured children from the incident, they pointed the fingers solely at those people. And I kind of thought to myself, I was like, man, I hope you never, ever. Well, but first of all, hope nothing ever. I feel bad for you because that's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
But oof, it's just so easy to act as if we are all in the proverbial glass houses.
Right.
Just launch with boulder launchers at people, because it's like, you know, it's so easy for your kid to have a couple of drinks and get behind the wheel of a car and take somebody out.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy for, you know, you person yelling this to do something that may seem like not a big deal, and it caused these massive problems. I don't think any parent looks at their child as a school shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Who does that?
No.
There's even mothers I know of gangsters don't think their kids are that bad.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a parent I know that's like, oh, yeah, my kid's that bad. Fuck that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Put him under the jail. He did it.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens if we are to change this paradigm of parental protection so much so that you're looking for the thing that's a behavior he was burning some ants. You know, burning ants that's Jeffrey Dahmer burn ants.
Well, I agree. I mean, in my first book, I went through all of these arguments because they were really popular when Kip Kinkle and Columbine happened, right? Mm-hmm. What are the three? There was, like, you know, psychiatrists on TV saying, you know, as experts, we know the three things that lead to this kind of violence. And I thought, what are they? And they were bedwetting, animal torture, and something. I can't remember the third one. But they were just sure that these were the three things that, you know, lead directly to becoming a mass shooter, right? And it was all, you know, it was a kind of cookie cutter approach, right? So, but I don't know that, you know, these are people who have experiences. They're not always born that way. I disagreed with, there's a popular crime writer, Jonathan Kellerman, who's also a, I don't know if he's a psychiatrist or a therapist, but he writes about a therapist. And he wrote a book, I think it was called something like Pure Evil, when Columbine happened. And he just said, some kids are just born this way. We need people to be able to identify them, professionals to be able to identify them, and basically lock them up forever. And I thought, how could you know, you know, especially when they're so young, you know, and how do you know that without interviewing these kids, right, that have done these school shootings? And so I have another reference that I like better, which is Dewey Cornell. I think he's retired now, but he was at the University of Virginia. And he interviewed he may have interviewed Kip Kinkle, and I think he interviewed the kid at Paducah, Kentucky. And his thoughts are that, no, it's not this individual child. It's it's the experiences that they go through. Mm-hmm. It's the deprivation that they suffer in their life that causes them to be, you know, to develop these kinds of issues. So I don't know, but I would hope not, because I don't think we should be arresting people for thought crimes. Although I will tell you a story. After 9/11, I had a student come into my, he was really innocent. He came into my office and he said, wouldn't it be great if we could just read people's minds and know if they were going to blow up the Twin Towers? No, it would be terrible. Right. I mean, I, as much as I appreciate why you're saying this, you know, after this horrible tragedy happened, no, I mean, I definitely wouldn't want that. So,
but it becomes the way, you know, everybody wants Minority Report.
Right. No, yeah,
you want
the
precogs to tell you what's going to happen. We tried Minority Report to some degree.
Yes.
With predictive policing. You know, so is this how far you want to go with it? Does do we go from Minority Report to Gattaca?
I hope not.
Where it's like, you know, we, you know what? We could just take your DNA, your non-criminal DNA, your non-criminal DNA, and we'll just construct the perfect non-criminal. I mean, what? It seems, I think there's people that may even think it sounds foolish to say, well, that is, you know, I'm like, dude, who thinks, again, who looks at their child and is like, today might be the day. I think I'm going to call in the bomb squad. And that's why I asked the question, what is that? I don't know what that's going to look like. When I was in Coachella Valley I was working a music festival called Desert Trip. And we were staying pretty far south in a place called Cathedral City. And where we were staying, we were going home from a first night of the show, and we got stuck because there's a huge police procession. And we found out that there was a shooter, and the parents had actually called the cops because they thought their kid was suicidal. Mm-hmm. And the cops came to do a welfare check.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And the kid shot the cop and then took off running. So the cops were looking for this kid. Sometimes it works out the other way, where the cops are hypervigilant and they go in because they think this is a situation where this person is going to hurt themselves or others. And they can, you know, they've done it before. They've shot and killed somebody. So again, I ask the question, what does it look like when you want to say, okay, well, I think my kid, you know what? All right. My kid's a school shooter. I think he is. Who do you call? Do you call the cops? Do you call the school? Do you call, who do you call?
I don't think anybody's going to believe you anyway.
Is that
good? Do you know what I mean? At least not me. You know, they think I was crazy. You know, what do you mean? How can you prove that? You can't prove that. What are you saying? We don't want to get out of our chair and deal with this right now. And who would, right? So I think you'd have to make a pretty tough case. You might have to like go to the courthouse and, you know, get some kind of order in order to get to go through.
It's, you know, if you're going to put these people in prison for 10 to 15 years for doing what, to your point, many people in the county have already done, buy their child a firearm.
Yep.
Then.
And the prosecutor said, I just found this so, she was lying. She said, nobody gives their son a gun and or buys their son a gun and tells them it's his. Yes, they do. They do that all the time. That's how kids learn how to use guns in Michigan. Their parents buy a gun. And they say, this is your gun because it's your size. You know, this is a 410 because it's your size. Then you'll move on to, you know, 30-06 when it's your size. I had dad or mom or whoever has their own gun. Right. So, of course, they do. I just found that to be just flat. She just flat out lied. That prosecutor, when she said that nobody would do that. And everybody in that county had to have known that that was a lie.
But do people see this? To your point, you said your friend saw this as like, oh, everybody felt relieved. Do people see this as a victory?
Yes.
For citizens at large? Or do they see this as, again, the first shoe to drop in this, you know, 1984 scenario?
My sense is that they don't see it as the first shoe to drop. They see it as, you know, it's probably unconscious, you know, because nobody asks them. But I think they probably see it as, we still get to keep our guns. Right. Yeah. We're always coming for our guns. And we get to keep our way of life or whatever that is. And these people are, you know, sort of sacrificed for that. But they don't see the long game, like you're pointing out, you know, that.
Yeah. I definitely think the long game is to attack. Once you've got a precedent set that you can charge parents with a crime like this and you can put them under the jail for a crime like this, I think parents are going to get charged for a lot of things that aren't necessarily school shooters. I think this is going to have some sort of effects when it comes to the LGBTQIA community.
Yep, for sure.
I think that's kind of what this is primed for.
I would agree.
And I'm shocked at how many people have kind of shrugged their shoulders in this world, in this kind of left media critique world. I'm shocked that many people have kind of shrugged their shoulders and don't even want to talk about it. But I think school shooters are hard for people in this world to talk about.
They are, very much so. And I mean, I think sometimes you find me, you know, I've been looking at it for so long that I just have a sort of dispassionate, you know what I mean? feeling about it, you know, not doing talking points. And that sometimes maybe annoys people too. But yeah, I mean, I think we should worry about that moving forward for sure. This long game that you talk about. And I mean, parents will be responsible for debt.
Oof. But what does that make you do as a parent? Hey, don't go to college. We can't afford it.
Yep. And they're already doing it with these like little credit cards that you're teaching your child to be financially responsible with it. And you've seen all these little credit cards that you can get for your kids when they're 15 or 14 or whatever.
Gross.
You know, that's part of it too. I think it'll be debt. It'll be truancy. I mean, that's happening right now post COVID because, you know, I even know at my kid's school, like half the time nobody's there. Like a third of the students are not there.
Really?
There's a lot of absenteeism. And that was another thing that they brought up with the Crumbly thing, was that it happened right after COVID. Mm-hmm. And he had been at home with his parents all that time and isolated. And then they went back to school. And I think he went to right to high school.
Awesome.
So probably not a good situation for him, you know.
But. This is sad. I wish I had a happy note to end on. I don't. I don't think there's a happy note on this, because I like someone said, they think something's up, but they don't know where the dice is going to land on the gambling table. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't know exactly where I think the long game is on this, but there's a lot of these political movements that we don't understand the long game on, especially when it comes to things like, you know, I say this on the show all the time, through the satanic panic, through giving prosecutors more rights because of laxed judges, you give, you take away a lot of autonomy to judges, give it to prosecutors. That ends up working out in the 90s for tough on crime laws.
Right.
For
right.
drug
moral
crime.
Panics. Moral panics everywhere.
So this is a bit of a moral panic, what we're talking about. You know, you're saying that these people just, you know, willfully ignored cries for help to that level. If I had a nickel for every person in my lifetime I've talked to that's had some sort of therapy for their, because of their upbringing, you know, none of them, by the way, school shooters.
Right.
My brother jokingly said, as he was a bit of a introvert, still is, in his high school yearbook, that he wished he could kill all of his classmates with telepathy. Was expelled from school. He was expelled before his
school year. Oh, that's pretty smart, though, with telepathy. Who? I mean, that's a fantasy.
He's a funny guy. Lovely man. But, you know, he graduated in like 2001 or something. So. I was like, no. We don't say that.
Well, there's all kinds of people that don't say appropriate things, right? That they don't mean, you know. So that's a problem too. I mean, what's going to happen with, you know, people who blurt out things, or, you know, I mean, it's just, I don't know. But I really can't believe. Hopefully they'll appeal it. I just, my sense is that their attorneys are not that good.
Yeah, I think the kid can appeal as well, the 15-year-old. Mm-hmm. But
he doesn't seem to want to.
He's 15.
I know.
He may feel different at 25.
That's true.
If he gets there, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The situation is horrible all the way around. First of all, nobody wins.
But we're a long way from 1997. Those 10 and 13 year olds who set up what do you call it?
I don't know.
Target practice.
Oh, okay.
Fire alarm and set up target practice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They've been out for years.
Really? And everything's fine. Well, I mean,
they're
not.
They are, but yeah.
Shooting up schools.
I think one of them, you know, went back to jail, but that was for something else, like drugs, selling drugs or something.
Interesting. I'd like to follow. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, because they couldn't do the death penalty, and they couldn't do Arkansas law for some reason, didn't let them give them. They had to be charged as juveniles at that time. They changed it after them. But so they got out at 18 or 21, I think.
Are we on the precipice of the Supreme Court saying, give these kids death penalty or life? We don't care.
Yeah.
You think so?
I can see the majority of the court saying that. I mean, you know, the conservative justices that are on it agreeing to that.
Do you think that we're in a moment where that can be a decision that people kind of applaud to a certain degree.
I really hope not. Only because a lot of people don't like a lot of the stuff the Supreme Court has been doing lately. So that might make them stop and think, you know, mm-hmm. well, we don't like Dobbs, right? We don't like, it's not reasonable. You know what I mean? We don't like, you know, a lot of these decisions are not reasonable. We don't like these comments about bringing back the Comstock laws. You know, that I think two of them, I know one was Thomas mentioned that, Justice Thomas mentioned that. And I think, I can't remember if it was the, it definitely wasn't the head of it. And it wasn't, I don't think it was Kavanaugh. It was that other guy. I can never think of his name. But anyway, they wanted to bring back the Comstock laws, if you know what those are.
You want to inform us?
Anthony Comstock was a postmaster who put together these laws in the 1870s to block obscene materials from being sent through the mail. And it was primarily to ban birth control and information about birth control.
Mm.
So, and they weren't repealed until 1965. And now they're talking about bringing them back. And it reminds me of the case, you know, in Arizona where they restored Arizona's abortion law going back to 1867, I think.
Yeah, I saw that.
So a lot of people want to go back and live in the 19th century. The mid-19th century.
Why did they think it was better then?
They didn't live there. So.
It wasn't better for everyone.
It was terrible.
I mean, definitely wasn't better for me.
It wasn't better for me either.
But, I mean yeah, well, you know.
26 times? I mean,
you should have known better with having your vagina and not being in the kitchen. That's what you should have known.
I know. No, it's awful. I mean, I think most people would agree it wouldn't be a good time.
I don't know too many people that opine for like. I take. You know what, Julie? Here, you're onto something, and here is the frightening reality of what you're onto. I've seen more. So part of what I do, besides reading people like you's books.
Mm-hmm.
In researching these shows, I also look up stupid videos on the internet that we can make fun of
mm-hmm.
behind a paywall. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, for some reason, I've been getting all these videos of young white women
mm-hmm.
bragging about how they cook food the long way, this long, unnecessary way of food preparation. Sure. There's names for all this shit. I don't follow the names. I'm just like, that's goofy shit you're doing. And if I say, is it bad to say goofy white women? Is that racist?
No.
Okay. Okay.
Because that is goofy.
Okay. That's some goofy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always like, my husband wanted blah, blah, blah. And my husband wanted, it was some snack that they made from scratch, like Cocoa Puffs or something. And instead of giving them
Twinkies, they made homemade Twinkies.
I wish it was homemade Twinkies, because that would have been cool. And I probably would have like, well, how did you do that? Let me jot that down. No, it was like Cocoa Puffs. And cool. She's like, well, I don't want him eating all of the preservatives. So I decided to make him Cocoa Puffs from scratch. And I'm thinking to myself, fuck, how do you have this much fucking time?
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I have kids and a husband and I have this beautiful fucking house. I'm like, no, really? Who are you fucking? Because whoever you're fucking, the money is long.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have a lot of time to do some unnecessary bullshit. Yes. Just give me the fucking coke. You know what? If you don't want me to die or get a foot chopped off, get the little box, Helen. Just get the fucking little box, Helen. Okay? Don't get the big one from the Costco. Just give me a little one. That's all I need. Because the equivalent of what she made, which probably took 6 hours, was that of the little box of cocoa. But just give me the little box.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I don't know.
They're trad wives.
But if this is a thing...
It is.
That you're like, I'm a real woman. I saw a video of this woman that said, if I had a time machine, I would go back in time, and the women that fought for my right to go to work, I would shoot them and tell them to fuck off. I was like, whoa! I know your job sucks, Maria, but Jesus, do you really want to depend on me? It's not what you want.
No, they are
making,
goofy.
You will not be making goofy. Cocoa Puffs, I'll tell you that much.
Because I nut quick.
No, you will not be making Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I like to cook, but like I said, I have 2 14-and-a-half-year-old boys, so at this point, it's just like feeding cattle.
Well, you need to watch these videos, because this will make you feel like a piece of shit. Because this woman has these kids, she goes, my kids wanted goldfish, and I didn't want them to eat the goldfish in the package. Why, Bethany? Just give them the little fucking packet of goldfish. So she went and she made this thing that I don't know if it was healthier.
Probably not.
And it took her hours. I'm like, dude, it took you so long to do this. Like, why would, like, she goes, my husband wanted birria tacos. And I, she shows herself making, but then she, like, had to grind the fucking corn for the corn tortillas. I'm like, what the fuck? I live in Mexico. And if I went to someone's house and they're like, we're having birria. I'm like, oh, really? Where should I be there? Oh, come around 6. I get there at 6. And she goes, don't worry, it'll be 5 more hours and it'll be ready. Who the fuck do you think? Why am I waiting here that long? What is going on? Her husband isn't walking around going, hey, fuck is taking so long for these goddamn tacos? I bought you those old El Paso taco shells.
No, it's true. It's true. It's insanity. It's absolute insanity. And the kids probably didn't even like those stupid goldfish.
Those kids are so homeschooled and brainwashed and unvaccinated and uncircumcised and un-everything else. I'm going to get all these messages about circumcision. To lose half of the feeling. I don't know. Did this happen when I was 2 days old? I don't know, man.
Yeah, I know. Who knows, right?
But if you're out there, wife, and you want a less of a glorious life, I can provide that. You won't have time to make the Cocoa Puffs.
You can buy the little box.
Get the fucking little box. Jesus, Kirsten. Just get the little box.
Too much time.
I hope when you, Julie, and everyone watching the show goes to the grocery store and they see a little box of Cocoa Puffs, they chuckle just a little bit.
I'm going to chuckle.
Julie, thank you.
I had fun.
Thank you for taking the time to hang out with me. Sure. Please. Julie, please, you and your lovely boys, please watch Ninja 3 The Domination. I promise you, it will be an enjoyable watch. I've seen that movie. I first watched when I was a little younger than them. It's totally kid appropriate. There's no nudity. There is an odd scene with V8 juice, but it's quicker than you think. Other than that, you guys should chuckle and enjoy some great martial arts choreography and some weird possession scenes. And again, Poltergeist, The Exorcist, Flashdance.
Flashdance is a great movie.
Well, you're going to get it all in one film with ninjas.
I love that movie. I love Poltergeist. I was scared to death of The Omen, but that's...
Don't watch that with the kids just yet.
My dad watched it with me when I was a kid.
Hey, you know, before a certain time, there were things that your parents watched. My dad watched a lot of things with me I'm not going to talk about on the main show.
Right, right. Yeah.
But yeah, movie wise, I saw way too many films. Someone wrote a comment on Facebook that I shared, and I've never had a comment get this many WhatsApps and comments on it. Was you Gen X people read Stephen King at a young age, and it shows.
Me too. Me
too. I was like, yeah, that's fair. Uh-huh. That's fair. Very fair. Yes. We do have a super chat. What is the guest's opinion on the hose? Loyal? Not loyal. Also, does Hodom have a part to play in thought crimes widely? Hoes are non-gendered.
Hmm. I'd have to break that into two. What was the first question again? Because I'm still trying. My mind got stuck on Hodom. And was it Hodom and thought crimes?
I thought your mind was stuck on, wait a minute, is this one of those things that I answer and then I lose tenure?
Yeah. Maybe.
That's what I saw in your eyes. I saw the risk of tenure loss. And then you at a community college buying the little thing of Cocoa Puffs because you can't even get the big box now. Yelling at those kids, you're going to take these old Paso taco shells and you're not going to say dick about it. And you better enjoy that PlayStation 2.
Mm-hmm.
And those games I got you at the Goodwill. Don't worry about answering that question.
I'm still trying to think about how
to do it. They said, Mike Ray says the Hoverton window.
I'm going to have to find a use for that term, that phrase. The Hoverton window. I crossed the Hoverton window.
They crossed the Hoverton window.
That might be fun.
Oh my god. Someone says, hey, the PlayStation 2 plays DVDs.
It does. It does. I had one of those for my kids. Now they have a 4, I think. We don't have a 5, but we have a 4.
Oh, they don't have a 5? Well,
no.
You answered the wrong question. They might have to lose that 4.
I tried to get them a 5 and they didn't want it.
Oh, well, maybe you have good kids.
I have weird kids, I guess.
Everybody has weird kids. Everyone has a weird kid. I've never met a person that's like, oh, my kid's so well adjusted. I was like, really? I just saw him eat a booger. Then he licked his fingers when he was done. I think that fucker's weird.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, thank you for your time, Julie.
Thank you for having me. This is fun. I got to go be serious about this tomorrow on TV. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's a local station, but it should be okay. But I won't be able to tell jokes and stuff. We won't laugh at jokes. She's not going to be telling me any jokes, I don't think.
You should always find a way to throw a joke in there.
It's probably true. But after these things that I do that are local, I always get emails from police officers.
Would they think you're like the person that can look at a crime scene and tell them who did it?
I mean, they're really nice. They're like, I'd really love to talk to you about this, you know? And I'm like, oh, I don't know about that, you know? Like,
you're like the remember all those 90s movies where a medium would come in like, I felt it, and the cops would.
Uh-huh.
Apparently that was a real thing in the Tate LaBianca murders. They brought a medium in.
Oh.
That didn't work. It wasn't like that's how they knew it was the Manson family.
Mm-hmm.
The medium let us hear. No.
Was the one with Sigourney Weaver and that guy from New Orleans?
Aliens.
No. The guy from New Orleans. He's a serial killer. He's a singer. He's a singer too.
Harry Connick Jr. Was it Copycat?
Yeah.
It's Copycat? Is that what it's called?
Thinking of that one where she, you know. She knows their MOs or whatever, and She has to say the president's names backwards in order to calm down, to leave her out. Because she got attacked by Harry Connick Jr. in the bathroom. You don't remember this?
That is how you should start off your appearance on the news. Just like, yeah, it's Harry Connick Jr. in the bathroom every time.
Dude. And then he wouldn't talk to her after she needed to talk to him unless she sent him a pair of her underwear, and I'm not going to say what he called them, but
panties?
Squirrel covers.
You could say that. That's fine. It's an odd thing to say. I've never heard that term. I probably shouldn't use it, but it's okay to say.
I've never forgotten it from that movie. And the way it's so harrowing. You know what I mean? It's like, ugh.
So if you went on a date, and the dude took you to say, hey, it's a surprise, Julie, but this is my favorite guy, and it's Harry Connick, would you just turn into catatonic shock? Like,
yeah. Nope. He was really good at that role, though, actually, playing a scumbag, but, so.
What a weird thing to say. If you want me to stop this, send me some panties. That's it? Okay. Here, I worked out in these. You'll love them. They're great for sniffing. Or do you want the ones I had after I had Mexican? Those are also going to give you an aroma.
Oh. Oh, Jason.
Yeah, have fun on local television tomorrow.
Thank you, I will.
They will not be as fun as this, just remember that.
No. No. All right.
All right. Well, have a good night, Julie.
You too.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you everybody for tolerating me.
that is Julie Weber, professor and apparently medium to the stars, as she will be appearing on local television. I don't know what they wanted to predict. Thank you guys for hanging out with me. There's no champagne room tonight, mainly because a 5-hour stream yesterday. 5-hour stream. So check that out. Just go to work tomorrow and just start as you in your traffic, and then by the time you end your shift, the show should be over. And that's cool. We're having movie night tomorrow. So if you're a patron, go to the Discord server at 6 p.m. Pascal and Toussaint will be there. I think probably gonna have a really fun post-show conversation. So yeah, there's no champagne room tonight. I could probably, but it would probably be another long session because I'm deliriously tired and don't know how to hang up. There's that. Someone says half of it, Jason, was on the mic. I wasn't. There's the whole issue, and I won't get into it. So I'm sorry. The first 2 hours of it, I will sound far away. The last three, I'm right there.
Because I nut quick.
Exactly. I'm right there. Also, thank you for this shirt. This is from Dizzle McFizzle, designed the Guerrilla Communism shirt. So, Alex Herbert, if you're watching, it says, we're coming for you on the front, and on the back, it says,
because I nut quick,
which is hilarious. Huh. Fucking hilarious. And I'm really excited to walk around with this and have people ask me, what does the back of your shirt say? And I'll be like,
because I nut quick.
That's what it says. You got a problem with that? JC says, time to go to sleep. You really got to go to sleep. Oh, JC. No. I got to prepare for Saturday's show. It's a doozy. When is it merch? I this is, I love the one-off. There's another person, Andrew Milhern, is designing a guerrilla communism shirt that's a little different. I don't know. But today was a pretty interesting day. I got a really nice message from someone that watches the show. I got this shirt yesterday. So, dude. It's been a great week. I look forward to see what you guys have to say about the movie tomorrow. I watched everything that came out about the riots. And this is the only thing I've gone back to several times. Because it does give you a 10-year period. If you guys don't know, I actually did a video essay about the riots. And we're going to do a show about it next week with Bill Cody and friends, because I don't know who's all going to be on it. He named a lot of his friends that he thinks are going to be down. So that's going to be really cool. So again, tomorrow night, if you're a patron, if you're not a patron, become a patron. It's really fun. Join us for movie night. If you want to just check it out, see what it's like. You want to try on those shoes before you possibly buy them. We have a free tier that you can try it out. So patreon.com/bitterlakepresents for $3 a month or $30 for the year. You can join us for movie night. Kush, look, the Saturday stream is already up. I put a calendar out every week of the shows for the week. So it's there. Don't be difficult. It's already there. And I forgot the title. That's why I just forgot the title. But the calendar is out. I put it up on Twitter. I put it up on Instagram. I think. Maybe I put it up in my mind. But it's definitely on social media somewhere. So thank you guys for hanging out with me. Thank you again, Julie Weber, for taking the time. She got her days confused, so the fact that she was able to do this last minute is great. And if you disagree, leave a comment. I mean, what I tell you guys is that you guys do it anyway. But seriously, if you have something you'd like to add, I want to know, how do you guys feel about locking parents up for the crimes of children? What is the end game in your opinion? Is this too far? Are there situations you think that maybe the parents deserve to see some jail time? Let's say they gave their child alcohol, knowing they were going to get in a car and that car causes an accident that kills someone. Should the parents be charged? Should bars be charged? And there's some cases where bars get charged. Is this just the same thing? Is this okay to you? Do you think this is a bridge too far? Let me know in the comments. I want to know what you guys think. And also, let me know what year you would like to see for the next show. You know, the next music show is going to be the metal and punk of 1984. And I've already asked some people that were literally part of the Bay Area thrash metal scene to come on the show. They gave me a tentative yes. I haven't put all the names yet because I don't know who's all coming on. But it may be kind of insane. So that's this month as well. That being said, thank you guys. This was fun. I shouldn't say fun. This was an illuminating conversation. I can't wait to see what you guys say about this in the comments. And let's go out with something peaceful like cartoons. Peace out. See you guys tomorrow night.